Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 173.
This week on the podcast, the Dems finally debate, and America got our first look and what we hope will be our last at Lincoln Chafee and Jim Webb.
And Joe Biden's decision is still coming soon. He knows he has to make it before people start voting, right?
We finally found something that we agree with Trump and Carson on. Their next debate should definitely only be 2 hours long, possibly less.
And six GOP candidates will soon learn what all the rest of Earth already knew. That they have no prayer of being president.
Plus, apparently the US government and Fox News have an equally careful vetting process. Troubling?
And if there's one thing Rand Paul hates more than polling at 2%, it's a dumbass live stream.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
And this was an exciting week for reasons that you probably already know if you're following us anywhere on social media.
That's right.
The Democratic debate, the very first
one. It happened, finally.
It's a real thing that happened.
We're 1/6 of the way done with the Democratic debates now.
Yeah, we're only 1/1,000,000 of the way done with the Republican debates.
No, exactly.
Fortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have the first Democratic debate wrapped up. Joe Biden did not make a last-minute entry into it.
He didn't.
Still a man of mystery. We're going to talk in a little bit about how nobody knows what his plan is yet. Still.
So, yeah.
We're one debate in, and he's not worried.
No,
he might run,
not.
He might not. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting debate, mostly because a thing that we predicted would happen, and we love being right, which was that all pundits everywhere declared Clinton the winner far and away immediately.
Yes.
And every poll and focus group declared Sanders the winner.
Right. Now, there has been some sort of, there have been some more scientific polling that has come out.
Right.
Other than the instant, like, snapshot after
right.
the debate that shows Clinton maybe having done better than the initial ones right after.
It shows her also having gained more in the polls from the debate.
Right.
The actual, the polls of who won the debate all say Sanders in like large quantities.
Yes.
So people who watched the debate.
Right. Well, and he was also the most Googled person during the debate. Like, what was it?
And,
Didn't they say looking up the word socialism online?
Yeah, Merriam-Webster said that there was a huge spike in the number of people looking up the word socialism.
Yeah, and Bernie Sanders had a long conversation with Bill Maher about that on Friday, too, about how we need to sort of, like, demystify the word socialism.
Well, I was saying to Brent, I was like, I think secretly we might all be socialists and no one's willing to talk about it.
Well, and that was what Bill Maher's point was, and also and Bernie's, for that matter, too,
right.
is that, you know, I mean, if you like any of the social programs we have, then you might be a socialist.
Right.
And even the Republicans love those social programs.
Correct.
So, you know.
Yeah, my great achievement as a person, my oft-mentioned conversion of a Republican to Democrat-ness or whatever, was actually a conversion to socialism, where I was like, listen, I know you hate abortion, but let's talk about how I think you might be a socialist. And then she was like, I think I might be a socialist. And I was like, I have a solution. Don't get an abortion. Solved. You're a socialist now.
Yeah.
Moved on happily from there. In any case, the big moment of the night was the moment where Bernie Sanders was like, we're all sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails to Hillary Clinton. And where she laughed like a very, like a puppet.
Well, she has a weird laugh.
She has like a puppet laugh.
You and I discussed. Yeah, like, she has this weird laugh where it almost looks like both of her jaws are like her, somehow like,
She's doing something
that is anatomically impossible with her mouth when she laughs.
It's something that a puppet can do.
Yes, exactly.
Right, we're like both
sides of her
jaw. Because
only your bottom jaw moves.
Right.
But somehow she's like,
she's independently moving her upper jaw and her lower jaw.
Yeah, I don't know how she does it.
No, it's,
she's like a snake.
Just like a snake.
Yeah.
The kind of snake that loves a good joke.
Yeah.
But so, in any case, that was the big moment of the night. That was the most sort of repeated moment. And that's probably why everyone remembers Sanders so much from the debate.
The other thing that they remember is that he reminded them of Larry David, who impersonated him on Saturday Night Live last night, by the way, which was pretty good.
Yeah, he's like a Jewish guy from Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's
a lot of America doesn't know other Jewish guys from Brooklyn.
Right.
So they were like,
Larry David.
Another Jewish guy from Brooklyn. It's just like Larry David.
Exactly.
Like, if you're in Brooklyn and a Jewish person, you're like, no, that's how people
guy.
Talk. That's what a guy looks like.
It's a guy. Yeah.
But also, there were some exciting moments related to the less important candidates.
Yeah.
Because, let's face it, Hillary did fine. She's a good debater. We've known this about her. And she just sort of, like, did what she does.
Yeah, and she didn't make it. You know, she has, everybody talks about her being a good debater, and that's true. I mean, she's a lawyer, and she's smart, and she's sharp. But she has made debate gaffes before.
Yes.
I mean, in 2008,
no, you're right.
There was the thing about she didn't know how to answer the driver's license for illegals, and within the same debate, she gave 7 different answers to the same question.
Right.
And, you know, she's had moments like that on the debate stage before, and she
didn't
have any.
Well, she had a couple moments that were borderline in this.
She talked her way around a few things.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Like, a few things like, should we give, what was it, should we give driver's license to undocumented people? Was that the one? Or no,
that was
we,
the one in 2000.
That was the one in 2000. There was another thing about undocumented, healthcare. Should we give healthcare to undocumented people? And she took a very long time to give an answer that was basically no.
No.
But
she did the same thing with marijuana, too.
Yes, and
long
she did the same thing with marijuana.
Long time
to get to know.
And if you weren't paying close attention,
you might have thought she said yes.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Right.
But so, in any case, she did what she does. She didn't have any major gaffes, though. She did fine. There was a great moment where Lincoln Chafee went on railing about her emails, and they asked if she wanted to respond, and she was like, nope.
I know. Which was great, because I got a big laugh.
Yeah.
I will say that was, at least for me, the most likable that she had been in front of a large audience.
Well, here's why.
Because she is
it's
normally
the most
not.
That she's been in front of a large
that's
recently.
True.
I mean, she hasn't
been. But usually
been
she feels
anywhere.
A little stiff. She feels a little stilted. Something about even just the way she speaks to people seems odd.
Well, I think also
but,
she had
it,
the,
I didn't feel that.
She
with
had the
her.
Benefit here of having no one more personable beyond the stage. Because.
That's true.
Martin O'Malley is a non entity of a human being. A handsome guy who was just posing his way through the debate.
Yep.
Bernie Sanders is not trying to be like, well, we talked about this last week.
Yeah.
He's sort of like trying to be a grumpy old man, and that is what he was delivering.
Yeah.
Jim Webb, not likable. We'll talk about why in a second. Lincoln Chafee, more confused than anything else. No one's sure what he was doing there, including him.
Yeah.
So she had the benefit of going in as, oddly, for once in her life, the most likable and easygoing-seeming candidate in the room.
Right.
Because her major competition is a really angry old guy. So
yeah, exactly.
So
it's true.
She had that. So this was her moment to shine. And she did have that moment.
She did.
Bernie had a different kind of moment, which was the kind of moment where instead of sort of, you know, participating in the traditional debate dog and pony show about how he loves his wife and he loves his children and he loves his family and he loves America and he loves whatever. He only talked about issues and he only talked about we. He used only movement politics terms. So when his opening statement happened, after you'd heard everyone else go on about their kids and their dog and their mom and their whatever, he didn't mention his family once. He immediately dove into issues. He didn't ever say the word I in his opening statement. He only he only talked about what we needed to do.
Yeah.
And so there was a huge contrast tonally for him, which is what made him stand out.
Right. Well, and I think what is important to remember about him, and I think part of the reason why at least the pundit class probably thought that he maybe not necessarily didn't do that great, but like didn't come through, is because he sort of said the same thing that he always says.
Right.
But the thing about this debate is that 15 million people watched this debate, and I would assume a good chunk of those 15 million had no idea who he was. So it was important for him to sort of not get bogged down in the debate and just sort of like stick with his talking points.
He basically delivered a stump speech in several parts.
In several, right, exactly. And that was probably smart.
All he needed
and
to do.
That was all. Well, and you know, to me, I was like, I've heard him say this approximately 7,000 times.
Right.
But I'm also obsessed with him.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, I mean.
No, well, and also, I think this was very exciting for another reason, which was, did you, I mean, we've been watching these debates our whole lives. Brent and I, at least. Most of America has not been.
Yeah.
But, and every time that there's sort of like a progressive candidate in the mix, they're on the edge of the stage. They're having the Jim Webb problem of having no time.
Yeah.
They're not being asked any questions. They're not being addressed. And every once in a while, they get like a little shot in. And then
and they
everyone ignores
give an
them.
Applause line.
And
you know, it's just sort
line,
of like, I remember a Dennis Kucinich debate, you know, where he sort of, you know, just he'd get 30 seconds and he'd say that he was going to get rid of NAFTA and the whole room would explode. But that would be
and
the only time that you would hear the man
exactly.
speak.
Exactly. Yeah. And this
unless
was
it was to tell you that he believed in UFOs.
Correct.
So,
This was the first time that we were given this much time to a progressive candidate, and it was awesome if you are a progressive, because it was the first time that you got to hear all the talking points at one time instead of... So I think that he was effective in the sense that, like, given that much time, he, like, sort of covered all of the things that you would want to get big applauses on to show that the audience is actually quite progressive.
Yeah.
And especially when it came to, like, you know, there are not a lot of differences between the other candidates on the stage, but there are a lot of differences between him and the other candidates on the stage. And he was good at sort of being like, no, like, I am against free trade. No,
right.
I am for, you know, like, he was good at sort of, I think, you know, he kind of stumbled over the gun control thing a little bit because he's trying to figure out where he's, what to do about that, because his gun control record is not, it's like how Kucinich was like not great on abortion. Like, right. There's always one issue that these guys just, like, aren't getting quite right.
Yeah.
And he comes from a rural state, Bernie Sanders. Yeah. And so he's, like, not sure what to do about the gun control yeah. problem. But he's not in favor of common sense gun control.
Right.
So he's trying to figure out how to express that.
Yeah.
And that's, he gets dinged on that a lot, which we can understand because yeah. we are in favor of taking away all the guns from all the people. Right. But I think he was good at sort of, like, drawing comparisons that showed that he was really quite different than everyone else in the room. And that everyone else could just sort of, like, be the polished debater that they were supposed to be, and he could just sort of rant on issues that everyone yeah. actually wants to hear about and talk about how no one was talking about issues.
Yeah.
The big
question mark for me of this whole race is Lincoln Chafee.
Lincoln Chafee.
Because while I disagreed with almost every single thing that came out of Jim Webb's mouth,
correct,
I see a world in where he thinks that he can be president.
Correct.
Like,
he's like
he
the
has,
Wesley Clark.
Yes, he
vibe.
Has sort of like the, you know, he has the, he
the
worked
military,
it. He
the
can say that he's
Democrat
worked
it.
He's the, right, exactly. And, you know, I mean, if that was what we were all caring about right now, then maybe that, you know, I said, I think to you or to somebody, I don't
yeah.
know, like, he could have really
the
been
carrier,
giving
right?
John Kerry a run for his money in 2004 with the, you know, old white Vietnam guy when we were all so obsessed with the Iraq War.
Exactly.
It's just, we're just not there.
It's not
right
the right
now.
Moment.
But Lincoln Chafee, I cannot,
like, what on earth?
For the life of me, find one single solitary reason that he thinks that he should be running
to
for president.
To be fair,
right
it
now.
Doesn't seem like he is finding those reasons either.
No.
He was having a very confusing time in that debate.
He was.
Couldn't remember why he voted for voted against Glass-Steagall.
Right. Or for the, no, it was
the
Patriot Act.
Oh, yeah,
that's
the Patriot
what it was.
Act.
Yeah, because that was his first vote, and his excuse was his dad had just died.
Yeah. That's
and
not,
so,
by the
and
way.
And Anderson Cooper was like, wait a minute.
Are you saying that you didn't read the legislation?
Yeah. Now, yeah. in Lincoln Chafee's defense, not very many people read the Patriot Act before
so
they voted on it.
In
so
America's
gonna,
defense.
But do have a better answer, Lincoln Chafee.
As horrifying as it is when a parent passes away, if you are then the senator from a state,
right.
it is your responsibility.
You can also not vote on something, too.
So true. And you couldn't in that environment, but what you could do is read the legislation.
Yes.
That's just, it seemed like it was going to be an important vote even at the time.
Yeah.
We knew about it. We knew it was happening. But yeah, here's another question that I have. Does Jim Webb look to you like a cross between Martin O'Malley and Ronald Reagan?
Kind of.
Because he looks just like, and I couldn't, once he looked like a bobblehead version of a cross between Reagan and Martin O'Malley. And once I knew that, I couldn't unknow it.
Yeah, and Martin O'Malley, I want him to do better.
I
mean,
I know.
He's not my guy, but, like, I like him fine enough, and I just feel like he was so boring.
Well,
and he has a weird speaking voice.
He has he has weird gestures. I kept worrying he was going to knock something over. He seemed like he wasn't that coordinated.
Well,
that
he sounds weird. He sounds like he's talking, like, what he thinks, like, a presidential candidate from, like, the 1940s would sound like or something
like that.
Well,
he had 1940s candidate hair, too.
Yeah.
He just looked wrong, out of place, sort of. And also, well, I think this is finally a campaign where if you are to the left of Hillary Clinton, you have a guy who's, like, really, truly to her left.
Yeah.
Martin O'Malley, as much as he can say these things as if he's progressive, is squarely in the New Democrats' world.
Right. Well,
so
and as Hillary herself even mentioned,
if you're going to vote for one of them.
He supported her in 2008.
Exactly.
You know, so
if you're going to vote for a candidate that's part of the New Democrats, the Clinton Democrats,
right.
then you can have Hillary Clinton. You don't need to vote for Martin. Don't need to vote for a boring white guy if
right.
you're going to vote in that world.
Yeah.
You have a candidate already.
Yeah.
If you are going to vote to her left, then you have a whole set of problems that he doesn't solve by just being slightly to her left but still in her world.
Exactly.
Like that's, I don't know what he's up to.
Yeah,
he's not the drafter that I expected him to be. Also, one more thing before we move on. Is CNN being paid under the table to mention Donald Trump's Twitter feed 1,000 times a minute?
Yeah.
Because they mentioned his Twitter feed every second that they got an opportunity to in the lead up to that debate. They reported on what his Twitter feed had been saying. P.S. Not as clever as you wanted it to be.
No.
For like hours after. It was like every 5 minutes they were interrupting you with a dumb Donald Trump Twitter reference.
Yeah.
Like, Donald Trump's campaign, we're going to talk about later on this podcast, has been spending its money in weird ways already.
Yeah.
But I wonder, he claims that he hasn't put any ads out yet. I feel like they might be paying media under the table to just, like, mention his name at random times. And if they're not paying for that, CNN, get your fucking shit together.
You're doing it too much.
It's too much.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he's a comedian over there. Like, his Twitter feed is not that great. Unless he's getting into a Twitter war with someone exciting, like the El Chapo years.
Right, exactly. Or Rosie O'Donnell. Or Rosie O'Donnell. Right.
There's no reason to mention it. His live tweeting was not a thrilling live tweet.
Name calling, and they're not even that good.
No, it's like not clever.
Yeah.
You would think that he could get a comedian in there to spice it up a little bit. It's like, but it's like Dennis Miller or somebody doing. Like, they're not busy.
Yeah, seriously.
Anyway, as we said, as much as instant polls and focus groups far and away declared Bernie Sanders the winner, Hillary did get a bump in the polls.
Yes, she did.
She got a bump nationally, where she went up to 56% with Democrats, up from 45% before, and Sanders lost 2 points. And then she also is now neck and neck with him in New Hampshire.
Right, where Sanders had been up had by been, his double almost digits nine, in some polls.
Yeah, by almost 10 points. Yeah. So they're now, she's now at 37, he's at 35. Biden's still at 11. No one's... What happens?
I know, right?
What happens when Biden doesn't join the race?
And look, you know, I get it. I mean, I still obviously want Bernie, but I mean, just from only those 2 hours, she made herself seem as though someone I think a lot of people could who maybe had concerns about her as a candidate could vote for.
I feel and like I think what that she did in that debate was made it so that people who are sort of like not realizing that they're horribly sexist could, like, see her presidentially. Like, I have never had a problem viewing her as a good politician.
Right.
You know? She's, like, smooth in the room.
Yeah.
You know? Like, she's good in the room. So, like, I get that she's an effective politician. I argue that her effectiveness gets undercut a lot by a lot of things that are both outside of her control and inside of her control. Possibly also her terrible ideas.
Right.
But it's not a problem of me seeing her as a credible politician. Well, right. And I feel like there is sort of this idea that part of what makes her kind of like a difficult to elect candidate is that even as the woman people most sort of like see as a presidential contender, there's sort of like a thing no one's willing to admit to themselves where they kind of ding her on things where you're like, no, it's not that she sounded angry at this time. It's that she said the wrong thing. It's that she was in favor of the wrong thing.
Well,
it's
not,
it wasn't her tone that was the problem.
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, like, you know, 2 hours on a debate stage does not negate all of the things that I think are problematic about her policies and about her potential candidacy in a general election.
Yes.
But I mean, just in terms of like, you know, here's the image that she gave to 15 million people who watched that debate.
She did
like
a good job projecting the image she wanted to project.
Yes.
And that looked presidential. And so I'm sure that that is what, also, I've been surprised this whole time about this New Hampshire situation, because New Hampshire is the libertarian stronghold of New England.
Well, and I mean, New Hampshire is what brought her back from the grave in 2008.
So the fact that she's been losing so bad in polling in New Hampshire has always been sort of confusing to me in the first place.
Yeah, because they're not socialist there.
They're not socialist there. It's not Vermont.
I mean, it's next door to Vermont, but that's no reason that anybody has ever voted for anyone before. Like, that guy's from the state that borders us. I love him.
Exactly.
Even though he disagrees with everything that I stand for.
That's not a thing.
It's not a thing.
No, and New Hampshire and Vermont are, like, different, very different states.
Yeah.
Very.
Yeah.
There's also no road signs in New Hampshire because they don't pay any taxes. And so it's, like, complicated. Once you're in New Hampshire, you can't leave. Vermont at least will let you in and out freely, like a normal, happy place. Anyway.
Yeah.
Clinton is finally sort of, like, I think, getting into a groove now that she is allowing herself to be seen
in public. I think everybody in her campaign probably breathed a big sigh of relief. I feel like that sort of, at least for a while, stabilizes things.
Yes.
It seemed like it was maybe going off the rails a little bit.
It was going off the rails.
And here's the other thing about this. Why would we not want to be having more debates?
Oh, my God.
And that was Martin O'Malley's greatest moment of the debate line.
When he
addressed Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Specifically called her out in the front row.
But, like, we should want to be hearing from these candidates because there's so much, they're talking about the issues. They're talking about the issues that people care about. They're talking about the issues that the majority of country agrees with them on. Like, get them in front of people.
Right? That's such a contrast. Also, it only improves their prospects in the general, because the contrast between this debate and the two Republican debates we've had so far could not have been stronger. Like, those Republican debates are so bogged down.
It was just sniping and name calling.
Name calling, in hating these stupid issues like Planned Parenthood and all this nonsense.
They did on Meet the Press this morning, they always have a nerd screen every week, which is just like Chuck Todd's like giant touchscreen television monitor where they put stats up or whatever. But they did like word clouds of the last Republican debate and the Democrat debate. And like the Republican debate was like, God, ISIS,
Guns and Planned Parenthood. No, not guns.
The Democrats was
guns. The Democrats
was
guns, yeah.
But, you know, and then it was like, the Democrats was like, minimum wage,
right.
Big banks. I mean, it was just like the things that sort of like middle class. I mean, it was...
The things
people care about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just like a hodgepodge of like nonsense entertainment. On the Republican
debate.
Yeah.
That's not a real... But that's having them have a normal number of debates and having the Democrats have six debates only means that the Democrats get less screen... They get less screen time.
Correct.
And they get less of a chance to look presidential. And in a year where this is someone like Hillary Clinton's best opportunity to look presidential. Because even when she's had debate gaffes, they're not as gaffy as when she tries to speak to a crowd. She sounds insane when she tries to speak to a crowd. That's not her bread and butter.
Yeah.
So to give her an opportunity to talk about the issues and have people be like, oh, she seems knowledgeable and presidential, that's what you need on the Democratic side if you're Debbie Wasserman Schultz and you're convinced that she's the only option on that stage. If you're an American, it's what you need so that you can be like, I need to make sure that these candidates all move far to the left, so I'm going to support Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Like, it's what you need if you're just a human being.
Yes.
It's what people are needing.
Yep.
And as we talk about her poll numbers coming up, we should also mention that Bernie Sanders had like a massive fundraising round after this. With 3 days following the debates, he made $3.2 million.
And just the night after, like, from his fundraising email that he sent, you know, that was, like, basically right as the debate ended, which had obviously been written not by him before the debate, but that's how all these emails are. Anyway, but he raised, like, $1.3 million, like, in the hours after
and
the debate.
This is from 97,800 contributions. I want to contrast to the fact that in a little bit we're going to talk about the Republicans who may or may not be dropping out of this debate.
Yeah.
I mean, dropping out of this race. And I think it was Lindsey Graham who, in the last quarter, had 89 contributors, or Pataki or something. It was like there are Republicans in this who are in the last quarter getting less than 100 contributors, and most of those bottom six had under 1,000 by far, but like also under 500, under 100 for a lot of them.
Well, also Lincoln Chafee has raised $30,000, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
This campaign. Yeah.
But so when we talk about 97,800 contributions, that is a huge
number. Average donation $32.
Of course. Classic. Well, that's what they were asking for.
Yeah,
they were asking for a very specific number that was the average donation, as I recall. And it was something around there. But so, and also right after, he had a fundraiser that was only a $25 plate or person fundraiser. Then he had a $250 plate fundraiser that. He's really like fundraising up a storm. But this is to compare this to the Clinton campaign. In the last 4 months, she's raised $5 million. And so in 3 days, he raised $3.2 million.
Yeah.
And when we say in the last 4 months, this is of people giving under $200. So it's fewer donations. I mean, it's fewer donators as well.
Yes.
But one donation that Bernie Sanders is not willing to accept.
Yes.
This made great / wonderful / big news.
Yeah, this was good.
This week. As we remember a few weeks ago, Martin... Shkreli?
Yeah.
It's so hard to say, guys.
Yeah, it's hard to say. And also, like, a person with that name, like, I almost feel he's forced to be evil with that name.
I know.
I mean, I almost feel bad
for him.
There's
no vowels in it.
I mean, it's just like, that is a villain from, like, a James Bond movie name or something like that. I mean,
This is the CEO of Turing Pharmaceuticals, who were the ones who raised that AIDS drug from $1,350 a pill to $750 a pill.
Yeah.
Tried to give Bernie Sanders $2,700, which is the max donation.
Right.
And Bernie Sanders was like, I'm not taking this.
Yeah, well, they had kind of been going back and forth on Twitter.
Yes.
Because Bernie, you know, said something to him on Twitter, and then, like, he and PharmaBro responded. That's what we call him, by the way.
Yeah.
And so he basically, he gave him the campaign
$2,700. But then openly admitted that he only gave him the money because he wants to meet him privately to explain what the pricing in pharmaceutical companies is all about.
And so Sanders gave the $2,700
to a health clinic.
To the
Whitman Walker Health Clinic in Washington.
Yeah, so.
And so, in any case, Sanders has refused to meet with him and pass on his donation.
Fuck him.
Yeah, no.
Who cares? Like, what's he want
to... This is the exact thing that he is against, is having private, rich people come to him and try to explain why they need everything to be so evil.
Yeah.
Like, this is not what his campaign... This is what Hillary Clinton does. She meets with rich people and they explain why it's important for them to maintain their richness. And she's like,
she smiles
totally
and nods,
understand.
And then they give her a bunch of money.
Exactly. And then she supports policies that screw the middle.
And they give more than $2,700 because they can give it to her super PAC.
So this is exactly what Bernie Sanders does not stand for, which is rich CEOs meeting privately with him when regular Americans don't get to do that.
Right.
Also, what the hell is going on with Biden?
I know.
Biden who didn't show up at this debate. They saved a spot for him. Yeah. They didn't give to Lawrence Lessig, but whatever. That's a discussion for another time. Is still sort of like teasing the idea that he might run.
Right.
Like they're still not decided. The filing deadlines start in November 3rd. So they are coming up. So he's got to decide in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But he's been, like there's been a series of things that he's been doing that have been making it seem like maybe he's still thinking of running.
Yep.
He was teasing reporters. He was meeting with the president of South Korea. And he was like hanging out with journalists that were outside of his house right before this meeting. Yeah. And like started just screwing with them. They were asking him if he was, running. And he was saying, I'll answer in Korean or I can't hear you. So I'll talk to you all later. Like things like that. His staff met with the DNC last week to talk about, and this is the kind of meeting, by the way, that all campaigns do. It's like the kind of meeting where they talk in detail about boring things like funding, you know, and deadlines and things like that. Things you wouldn't want to sit through if you were just casually considering a run.
Yeah.
So.
And I think also I read something last week that a lot of his, you know, inside circle and stuff were like making calls to like labor leaders because, you know, he thinks that's going to be where he might have a little bit of an in.
He was talking to the president of the International Association of Firefighters, who basically let on that if he runs, they'll be backing him. They had like a phone call on Friday after the debate when Joe Biden was still not running for president, where he kind of indicated that he might be running.
Yeah.
And they sort of said that they indicated that they might support him if he runs. And then there was this like weird email exchange with a former Delaware senator who is one of Biden's advisors who like has been sending like these emails that kind of like lay out what a potential campaign would look like. And the emails themselves make it sound like he's already running.
Yes.
So, you know, they say like, he believes we must win this election. Everything he and the president have worked for and care about is at stake. And if he decides to run, we will need each and every one of you yesterday. Like, like why would you send an email like that if you weren't running for president?
Now, there are some reasons why people feel like maybe he hasn't gotten into the race. Specifically, he was waiting until after this debate to sort of see how that
played out.
And the common thinking after that debate was that now there's no place for him.
Right.
Because, you know,
it sort of it shuffled things down.
His place is the same place as Hillary's, basically.
Martin O'Malley's.
He's a little bit more just like generally likable as a person, I guess. I don't know, but I mean, like, it's the same.
He's more male.
That's true. Yes. And also, I heard an interesting thing where people were talking about how he was potentially waiting to see how this FBI investigation shook out.
These
emails.
Yeah.
But that might not be done by November 6th. And that also might not turn up anything either. So it's sort of like, it's, you know, I mean, he's just, if he wants to run, he has to decide. And he also has to sort of, he shouldn't be banking his candidacy on
Hillary
some of these other things anyway, because like that's not enough. He has to have a legitimate reason to be an actual candidate for president.
I know,
and if his only reason is like maybe the FBI is going to find a shady email or something, like, I mean, that's
seems like he's sort of waiting to see if Hillary self-combusts and deciding like, oh, I'll be the guy who steps in when Hillary self-combusts.
Well, for a while, it seemed like maybe that was going to happen.
Right.
And it still potentially could.
But
I mean, you can't wait around
November
the entire time because that's like 2 weeks away from now or 3 weeks away.
In the process,
right,
things are going to change between November and the first primaries in February.
Yeah, of course.
So there's plenty of room after he's declared in, you know, for something horrible to befall Hillary Clinton and for there to be no one to sort of step into that place.
Right.
And so if that's his big strategy, then he might as well just declare.
Yeah, exactly.
And if it's not his big strategy, why is he thinking of running for president? It makes no sense.
Yes, exactly.
I agree. Another old white guy to run for president.
Bingo.
It's crazy. Also, though, guys, this debate situation in the DNC has really been like a whole shit show. Because not only is Martin O'Malley pissed at Debbie Wasserman Schultz, but like people who are
other vice co-chairs, I think, of the DNC.
Other vice co-chairs of the DNC are also pissed at Debbie Wasserman Schultz and are starting to talk.
Right.
It's going great.
And it was happening all leading up to the debate.
Yeah.
And one of them got disinvited.
I know.
And then Sanders invited her.
Yeah. Well, because Debbie Wasserman Schultz was like, no, it was just too much of a distraction.
Right.
Like, that's not...
Yeah.
That's how you silence dissent if you're a dictator.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
well, that's what everyone is basically accusing her of being.
Yeah. No, exactly. So the former mayor of Minneapolis is a vice chair in the DNC, and he was the first one to kind of speak out about this. He said that she had made statements about having consulted everyone about the number of debates and their schedule that were, quote, flat out not true.
Right. Apparently she didn't at all.
No.
And she just basically told everybody that this was the plan and then didn't discuss it at all and just said, that's that. And then everybody was like, wait, what?
Yeah. And so this mayor, Ryback, mentions another vice chair in his comments who was the one who got disinvited.
Right, Tulsi Gabbard.
Tulsi Gabbard, who got disinvited from the debates after complaining to Debbie Wasserman Schultz herself.
Yeah.
And then Debbie Wasserman Schultz's office was like, no, distraction. And then so Ryback said, I'm seriously questioning whether she has the capacity to do what has to be done. And that's why I'm doing what I wanted not to do for a long time, which is go public with my serious questions about whether she can lead this party.
Right. Like, well, everybody is accusing her of just, you know, making the way for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. Which well, that's exactly what she's doing. She's doing it openly. So there's not even an accusation to be made, really. She's like actively seeking that outcome.
Yeah.
But that's not how primaries work, guys. That's not what the party is for.
No.
Also, I have another conversation to have that is sort of related.
Let's do it.
Because it has to do with the Clintonian Democrats.
Sure.
Bill Clinton, specifically.
The original.
Who was on Colbert, the new Colbert, the old Colbert, and was asked what he thinks the whole Sanders thing is about.
Yeah.
And his answer showed such a lack of understanding of what the whole Sanders thing was about that I was like, holy fuck. These Democrats really don't understand what's going on in their own party.
They probably don't.
And that is troublesome to me. Because if they don't understand what's going on in their own party, they have no way to fix it. I mean, they have no way to address it appropriately. So basically, he was asked, and why are people supporting Sanders? What's going on with that? And he said, well, you know, they're seeing dysfunction in Washington, and they're seeing the right move far to the right, so they thought we better move right, you know, far to the left.
No.
Which is not what's happening at all.
No.
Like, people are frustrated, yes, that nothing is happening in Congress.
Yeah.
But the reason that Democrats are moving to the left is not because they see the right moving to the right, and they're like, well, we better match them in extremism.
Yeah, no,
it's because they're not seeing the Democratic Party answer to their needs or address the issues that they want to see addressed. And part of that is that he runs, or, you know, his family basically runs this, like, corporatist Democrat wing that is in bed with all of the people that Democrats don't want to be in bed with.
Right, well, and I think that, and I think we saw a little of this at the debate, actually, too. I think this answer partially is sort of in, you know, his attempt to keep up his legacy as well, because we heard a lot from actually Martin O'Malley, more than anyone really, about Glass-Steagall, which everyone was, you know, blaming for the crash that we had, which is absolutely accurate, and that was happened under Bill Clinton. We heard a lot about from Bernie Sanders against some of this free trade stuff, which as Democrats the Clintons invented. And so I think that he also just doesn't want to acknowledge that the party is sort of like...
It's moving away from his...
The further we get away from his presidency, the more we realize maybe we didn't like it. Yes, we created a lot of jobs at the time. There was economic prosperity, but at what cost?
Exactly.
And I think that he... I think just being who he is won't admit that to himself. Right. I think that's what part of this is.
Oh, for sure. But it also makes me feel like maybe the Democrats have their heads so far up their asses that they're not understanding how to respond to their own party and what, like, this is why, you know, if they were smart, they would have run Liz Warren, because if they were smart, they would have found a candidate who could address both sides of this party at once.
Yeah.
And she's a candidate that could have done that.
Right.
I mean, and their decision not to even sort of like include her in this process is, I think, a sign that they're not really sure where the party is right now. And they are sort of having their own kind of culture war, like the Republicans are. It's less violent and less stupid.
Right. But I was going to say, it's on policy.
It's on policy, at least. But I mean, they, like the Republicans, are sort of misunderstanding where their base is and how they can bring them back. And part of it is they're so dedicated to these policies that bring in all the money that they're not thinking about what the policies are that bring in all the votes.
Yeah.
And it was like troubling to me that Bill Clinton himself is sitting there thinking people just don't realize what they're doing.
Right.
Like, people know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're just, and like also sitting around thinking that like, it's not important for them to have policies that attract votes. It's only important that we can make the money.
Yeah.
The votes are not important. We don't care if there's excitement about these policies, because there's no excitement about Clintonian, policies.
Right.
It's just like, we don't need votes. We need corporations to love us so that we can make money.
Exactly. Yes.
Like, they invented soft money in that campaign. I mean, like, they didn't invent soft money, but they were big receivers of soft money in his presidency. So that was when we started talking about soft money in the first place.
Yeah.
So like, anyway, troubling to me. I was pissed. Moving on.
Yeah.
We're talking now about Hillary Clinton potential VP slots.
Right. Because and we're talking about the person who has been the potential VP.
Well, there's only one option.
There's only one option. I mean,
and it's sort of, I think, worrying because it's an option that doesn't have a tremendous amount of experience.
Right. Well, and so it's who like, we're talking about is Julian Castro, yeah. who is the head, the secretary of the Housing and Urban Development. And
great
and
guy.
he was given that job. A lot of people, we talked about this on the podcast, yeah, a lot of people think that he was given that job to have some sort of experience like this to be able to be on the ticket with
right.
him.
Because he'd ever been is a mayor.
He had been seen as like the rising star, but had right only been the mayor of San Antonio. So he became the secretary of, you know, housing and urban development. Basically, so he could be Hillary Clinton's vice
exactly.
presidential candidate.
Yeah.
And he endorsed her on Thursday, and she basically just came right out and said, yeah, I'm going to consider him for vice president, yeah. which is odd this early to start being open about who you're considering. Usually you don't show your hand, but everybody knows, I think.
Everyone knows. Well, it's like so obvious.
Right.
And everyone also knows
it has to be a young, non-white male.
It has to be someone who can appeal to Hispanic voters.
Yeah, exactly.
And that... I mean, specifically in this right. election year when the Republican Party is getting so much mileage out of demonizing Hispanic voters.
Yeah.
It has to be... So she is just sort of like, well, we have a... Here's a primary of all white people, mostly white men. Like, we've right. got to start talking about, you know, Latino issues at some point.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to start hinting about this because that's all we have.
Yeah.
We don't have an actual, like, person running who can speak to these issues.
Exactly.
So I might as well just start talking like I care. But I feel like... I don't know. This is an interesting strategy because it's not the way that you pick your VP candidate if you are not a Republican is usually you go to someone who has their own base so that you pull in
right.
their base.
Who and, has their own base? And also, I mean, I feel like at least what we have done in the past is also pick someone who we feel confident could be the president.
Right.
I mean, and this is what we knocked John McCain for. And I'm not saying
that's
that
what I was gonna say.
I'm not saying he's Sarah Palin.
This is not Sarah Palin, but this is the same kind of mistake you could make.
Right, exactly.
Where Sarah Palin was there just to be a woman.
Right.
And she didn't have the qualifications, and no one was... And Julian Castro is a smart guy,
right,
but
she'd been a governor for
She'd been
sake.
A governor, exactly. But, like, he doesn't have experience to point to that can really... That's really relevant to this. And also, he's so squarely in their camp that he doesn't offer a perspective that, you know, like, when we had Obama, we had this sort of young, dashing guy, but then Joe Biden was there to be the foreign policy experience.
Right, exactly.
Because Obama didn't have any foreign policy experience.
Right.
Joe Biden added something to that
right.
candidacy. Julian Castro really just adds
he's only
being like adds tokenism to the
I was
ticket.
Gonna say he adds youngness and tokenness
right
yeah.
which is not I don't think that smart of I like and I understand that we don't have a tremendous number of like rising stars in the Latino Democratic community to choose from, but there are Latino politicians with experience
yeah.
out there and
yeah.
It seems like grooming somebody is not as good as
right.
finding someone who has a base.
Right, and I get wanting to have a Latino on the ticket, but also I don't really think that it's that necessary.
No.
I mean, just in terms, I get it, but I mean, also like you know, it could be an African American person. I mean,
right.
I think really it could be another white person.
This seems like a weird strategy, especially because, by the way, Julian Castro's twin brother is in Congress.
Right.
So, like, why not Joaquin Castro?
Right.
What's wrong with him?
Yeah.
Why is Julian getting all this special treatment and Joaquin has to go and do nonsense in Congress?
I know.
Just, like, even his own brother has more experience governing than he does.
Yeah.
But so, this is, like, a weird, I think, misread of what the politics of finding a VP candidate are.
Yeah.
And they've been so open about it that it's like there's no question that this is what they're at least intending to do, and maybe it will change. But anyway.
Yeah, it could.
Julian Castro's a great guy.
Sure, he's lovely.
I can't say that I think this is a good idea.
Yeah.
Moving on. By the way, Huma Abedin testified before the Benghazi committee.
Forever,
for
too.
A thousand years this week.
all the hours
She fit
of Friday,
a thousand years into a week somehow, which was amazing.
I think it was one day, wasn't it?
It was one day.
Wasn't it just Friday?
It was just Friday.
Yeah.
But it was in a 1,000-hour version
oh my
of
God,
Friday,
I
and
know.
It was in private. So we there are transcripts, but no one's going to read them because they're 1,000 hours long. But in any case, Clinton is testifying next week, so that's when we're going to on Thursday.
Yeah.
So that's when we're going to get the real scoop.
Yeah.
Huma Abedin is not. First of all, she's not someone who ever talks to the press, and not someone who was going to ever speak publicly about this. So who knows what she said?
Yeah.
But she obviously has been Clinton's aide for all of time.
Yeah.
And Anthony Weiner's wife for now of time. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So we'll see how that goes. I'm excited for the Clinton testimony on Thursday because I think that I bet she's excited too.
Oh, I was she's got to be because now that everyone has admitted, because there was another politician, another who basically
a second person admitted
that this was all a politicized attempt to like get Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
So now that that's open out in the open, what does she have to lose by being sort of like, what the fuck, guys?
Yeah, I mean, she could just go there and just literally tell them that they're all...
that they're all being assholes.
That they're all being assholes, even if they ask her legitimate questions. I mean, she...
yeah, no, she...
she has... she, no she longer, now has something to fall back on.
She no longer is on the hook to, like, take this seriously.
No,
she doesn't. Which is good, I think. Because that finally... I think so, too. I'm so sick of hearing about this.
I know.
Sick of hearing about her emails. I'm not as sick as Bernie Sanders because I do love all of the Veep-like shenanigans that we learn about in her emails.
Yeah, exactly.
I wish every public official had their emails examined this carefully.
I want to know what tea she's drinking. I want to know what television show she's watching.
How can we...
I want to know more about gefilte fish.
Definitely more about that. Yeah. Like, how can we get all politicians to release their emails in this much detail?
Yeah, I agree.
Because this is what... I'd like to know. It's made... this is what news is made from. This is it. In any case... GOP debate, number 3, coming up.
It's coming up. It's going to be on CNBC.
It's going to be a channel that you may not get, because I certainly don't.
I was going to say.
It's on October 28th.
Right. And now you can imagine, we know the last debate was 3 hours, which was too long. Now, if you're CNBC, which is a channel that no one watches ever, you probably want this debate to be 74 hours
long. Right. You're looking for a three-day debate.
That's right. Because that's
the first time and last time anyone's going to watch CNBC.
Bingo.
And I wonder if they're going to do... you know what I think has been interesting? Is the Democratic debate was on CNN, but they forced, I think, CNN... I think the DNC forced this. I can't remember who was in charge of this. But they made CNN make it available to everyone online.
Oh, right.
It was a free stream. The Republican debates were not like that. You had to...
oh, yeah, you had to
cable channels. You had to authenticate. If you were going to watch Fox or CNN for the Republican debates, you had to have cable.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of interested to see what CNBC does, a channel that no one knows how to find, let alone whether they have or not.
Yeah. But there was some drama with this debate because they've been working to try and get the rules together with the candidates and the RNC, and there was drama.
Yeah.
Because there were a few issues here at stake.
Right.
They wanted it to be 3 hours, which the candidates did not want it to
Trump
be.
And specifically Trump and Carson were like, hell no.
Right, exactly.
Stop yourselves immediately.
So in an attempt to get the time down, they wanted to get rid of the opening and closing statements. You know, those like where they give them 60 seconds to just
to, like, talk about their wives.
To talk about their wives. Exactly, yeah. And so, and Trump and Rand Paul...
were like, hell no.
Were pissed about that.
Well, Rand Paul specifically was the angriest about it. His aide, they had like a conference call with CNBC and basically like told them to go fuck themselves.
Right. But if you're CNBC,
I understand
like,
why. I understand why from both.
Right. Because if you're trying to get it down to 2 hours, I mean, if there's 10 candidates up there and they all get 2 minutes.
You want.
To say something.
Yeah, no, that takes up an hour 60, of your time.
The debate's a third
and
of the way.
And here's the thing. In order for the debate to be exciting and for people to report that a debate on CNBC was exciting, you need them to be yelling at each other.
Right.
And they don't yell at each other during the opening statements. That's just them talking at nobody.
Right. Exactly.
So they're.
I mean, Trump might call somebody a name in his opening.
Well, so he might. But then you've got nine other people. And what are they going to do?
Right.
No. I feel like CNBC is not interested in reporting the news and or getting people's positions out in the open. What they're interested in is making good television.
Correct.
Another person who knows about making good television.
And more importantly, and this is what Trump
said.
Selling a lot of ad time. And Trump was the one who brought this up, and that's because he's no idiot.
Trump is the only one who knows how to make good television on that panel. And what he basically was like, it's not going to be good television if I don't show up. So either you can have me not show up, and you can have the debate be 3 hours long. And you can sell no ad time because no one's going to watch. Or you can have me show up and have 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I'll, you know, you can make more money doing that.
Yeah.
So he basically gave them a, you know.
I promise I'll say something really bombastic in those 2 hours.
Exactly. But in any case, this is funny because so many candidates got involved in changing the parameters of the debate that they're going to be subjected to.
Well, there's
and
so
it
many
was all
anyway.
The crazy front runners.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it was Trump and Carson that were like, no to the 3 hours.
Yeah.
And also... they just need to, like, they don't need more ad time, Trump and Carson. They are somehow getting enough discussion in the news.
Are.
So, for them, it's not, like, having a longer debate doesn't Doesn't all do it does is help someone else shine. Like, they don't give a shit about that.
Right.
Trump has time in two-hour debate to say three bombastic things that will be reported on ad nauseum in the news.
That just gives Carly Fiorina another hour to make stuff up that everybody's going to love.
Exactly. No,
that's not what those two are looking for.
That's not what those two are looking for. And Rand Paul is not looking for having to debate with anyone because he doesn't stand for any of the things the rest of them on the stage stand for.
Well, right.
All he wants to do is lay out his independent policy view, you know, his independent views for what should happen, and then not be asked a question ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't want to look like he's involved in those shenanigans because he's trying to look like a legitimate candidate,
only
50% successfully, but that's why he's not trying to be interested in any of that. So in any case, they came up with a compromise.
Yes.
They're going to have 30-second opening statements. What is that even time for?
I know.
Like, your name and the ages of your children? Because you know they have to get through those. I mean, despite the fact that we've heard it twice before, it doesn't matter. You have to name all of your children, their ages, and professions, and then talk about loving your wife before you can get to any policy.
That's right. So that's the whole time.
That's the whole time.
Yeah.
So, and I'm curious to see what 30 seconds looks like, and also how many of them abide by the 30-second rule.
Yeah.
If we've learned anything from Jim Webb, who spent the entire Democratic debate complaining that he wasn't getting enough time, it's that you can extend your time indefinitely by complaining about not having enough time.
But then still not get to say
anything.
Because you've only
complained
about
used all of your time
complaining
about not having enough time.
Yeah.
Also,
hey, so remember back in debate number two, guys,
yes.
when the biggest applause line in the whole room, other than other than Carly Fiorina's, you know, jab to Trump, was infuriating one, where they were talking about the legacy of George W. Bush, and Jeb Bush reminded us that George W. Bush kept us all safe during his presidency, and the crowd went wild, and all
and the crowd at home was like, huh?
All, everyone else collectively was like, wait a minute. Hold on a second.
It's like when you say something that's definitely not true enough times that it starts to sound like a fact.
Yeah. So, guess who finally is coming to...
Not taking it.
Right. Donald Trump.
Yeah. He doesn't take it ever.
Right.
So...
No. He reminded us all...
Yes.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, no. He was on Bloomberg
doing
an interview where he reminded us all that he remembers what actually happened under George Bush. He said, when you talk about George Bush, I mean, say what you want. The World Trade Center came down during his time.
Yeah.
The host interrupts and says, but you can't, surely you can't blame Bush for that, you know, for the attack.
You can.
And Trump says, he was president, okay? Blame him or don't blame him, but he was president. The World Trade Center came down under his reign.
Yeah.
His reign, too. I love that he used the word reign.
That's good. Well, and also, I sent you the link to that Think Progress story, and I was like, are they doing comedy now? Because, like, they did this thing where they were, like, examined, like, was George W. Bush president during 9/11?
Right.
You know? And it's just sort of like, there were pictures of calendars and pointing when September is and when the January before was, when he was inaugurated, and, like, a photograph of him being inaugurated. Curated, like, to prove that he was actually the president. Like, you know, I mean, this, obviously, he's stating a fact here.
Yes.
And also, they, also in that Think Progress story, they printed the, you know, the off-referenced memo that he received, you know, in August about, you know, there could be some shit going down in New York.
He was warned about 9/11,
as
we remember.
Yeah. So... You can blame him if you want.
Yeah.
Whoever was interviewing him said you can't blame him for that.
But that's incorrect.
You're
allowed to if you want.
If you want.
First of all, you're allowed to do anything.
Right.
Second of all, when you have facts that prove that the point that you're trying to make is possibly true, you're definitely allowed to do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeb
took
to
Twitter.
As you can imagine,
Jeb wasn't happy about this.
Jeb was not happy about this. He tweeted, how pathetic for Trump to criticize the president for 9/11. We were attacked and my brother kept us safe. And then they started a Twitter battle because once you've tweeted at Trump, you've started a Twitter war. You can't think that you're just going to be, like, sending off random tweets to Trump and he's not going to respond.
No, that's not what he does.
No. Trump called Bush pathetic for saying nothing happened during your brother's term when the World Trade Center was attacked and came down.
Yeah.
And I will say that for all of my hatred of Trump and Bush, Trump is from New York.
That's true.
Bush does not get to say that he was an actual victim of these attacks.
There. Right.
And I do think that when you talk about what, you know, how those attacks were thought of and conceived of in New York, you get a much, you know, Ari Fleischer called Trump a truther for saying this. That truther story, if that's what being a truther is, then all of New York City are truthers.
Yeah.
Like, that is the sense that you get, that there's this sense that, like, they sacrificed us for the rest of the nation.
Yeah.
And so I feel like Trump is not just speaking from a point of crazy, which he usually is, but also from a point of, like, how New Yorkers actually felt about those attacks.
Yeah.
So in any case, this war that he picked, where, and then Peter King got all up in arms,
mm-hmm.
called it a cheap shot. Ben Carson said that blaming Bush wouldn't make much sense.
Well, he would know.
Right, like he knows what sense is. Ari Fleischer, as we said, called Trump a truther. And I would like to also talk about that for a second, because Trump is like a world truther. Trump is running a campaign based on a conspiracy theory that Mexico is sending criminals to us behind our back under the cover of night.
Right.
That is what his whole campaign is based on.
Yeah.
To call him a truther is not calling him anything that he is not. Like, so what if he's a conspiracy theorist about 9/11, add that to the list of conspiracy theories that their own base is buying
he's
into.
He was also a birther.
He's a birther, too. Exactly.
He was the birther.
He's the ultimate truther. Right. He's a conspiracy theorist at heart. Like, it doesn't hurt him to call him a truther.
Yeah.
That's not... this is the most sense he's made in years.
No.
So, like, in any case, I feel like you can try to discredit him by saying that, but the man is running a truther presidential campaign already. Like, what are you... And he's winning. So, like, what is your plan with that?
Yeah.
Also, he's running a hat campaign.
He is. That's all.
Most of what he's spending his money on is hats.
His hats.
He... They released their third quarter financing reports this Thursday, which is why all of these stories are coming out now. Trump was calling himself self-funded, but at this point he's raising a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, and this last quarter, he only contributed a little over $100,000 to his own campaign, but spent more than $500,000 on hats, which together and with t-shirts, it went up to $678,000.
I know. And also, guys, those hats aren't that great.
They're not that great.
Because besides that being a dumb slogan, which he has now coined,
make America great again.
By the way, make America great again.
Well, of course he has.
But
he's a businessman.
I mean, it's just boring text
on a hat.
It's boring
words on a hat, yeah.
Like, put a fucking flag on it or something. Like, you're running for the Republican and put an eagle on it, put a gun on it, put one of those don't tread on me snakes on it or something. Like, do something. It's a plain hat with, like,
words on it.
It's a boring hat. Like, you would look like an idiot in that hat.
Yeah. Well, everyone looks like an idiot. And they look like a boring person wearing a boring hat.
Yes.
This is, by the way, though, this amount that they've spent on apparel, more than any other line item except airfare on their campaign.
So good.
And he's...
It's almost $700,000 on apparel.
Yeah. No, it's $700,000 on apparel. But, by the way, he's raised, like, $3.8 million. And some of this from apparel. Like, he's basically running a business campaign where he's selling hats to people in exchange for donations.
That's what I feel like a lot of the people who are trying to elect him are
looking for.
Anyway.
Exactly.
It's a businessman to be running
New York Magazine put it well, and they said, from a certain angle, the Trump campaign resembles an enterprise designed to crowdsource capital for the purchase of trucker hats that sell those hats back to much that same crowd at a marked up price. Which is sort of genius.
That's hilarious when you think of it that way. It's really brilliant.
It's really brilliant. But by the way, I mean, because he's raised all this money, last quarter he contributed $1.8 million to his campaign, and this quarter only $100,000.
Yeah.
So he's really picking up steam. It's a little troubling.
Right. This hat business is taking off for him.
With that said, though, he's really, like, spending wildly because his campaign took in $5.8 million since it launched. And it's spent all but $254,000 of that money.
Yeah.
So they're spending all of their money.
Well, he figures he can, I guess, probably.
Yeah, right. There's always more.
Yeah.
There's always more where it comes from.
Yeah.
He's also apparently on the verge of making his first big ad buy.
Ooh, exciting.
Here's what I think, though. Don't bother.
CNN
is either under the table or for free mentioning your name at every possible turn.
I know.
So is Fox News. Every news network does nothing but talk about him. He doesn't need ads.
No, I agree.
Like, don't waste your money on ad buys. There's more hats out there to buy.
All MSNBC does is talk about Donald Trump. And that's not even the right party that they're supposed to be talking about. Like, what are they doing?
Yeah. No, it's like, he doesn't need the ad buy.
Yeah.
What he needs is apparently more trucker hats to expand the business.
That's right.
He could go on Shark Tank.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a...
Synergy.
The Synergy Shark Tank hat business.
Shark Tank meets The Apprentice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
That's good television right there.
Yeah, I agree.
Meanwhile, Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush are stuck in a hilarious war, partially a Twitter war, partially a real-life war.
Yeah.
Also related to these fundraising figures that came out.
Yeah, exactly.
This is hilarious because they're supposed to be BFFs.
They're supposed to be BFFs, yeah.
Bush apparently mentored Rubio.
Right. But the fact of the matter is...
Gave him a sword or something.
The fact of the matter is that only one of them... only one of them can be the winner, but
also,
only one of them can be the
winner of Florida,
the winner of sort of, like, it can't come down to the two of them.
No.
So, like, it can only come down to maybe one of them and someone else.
Exactly.
So it's, they have to get rid of the other to be able to be there at the end.
So they're having a weird back and forth over their fundraising totals.
Yeah.
It starts like this. On Thursday, the Rubio campaign tells its supporters that it raised $6 million between July and September. The media reports that number as well. The true number was more like 5.7, but whatever. Right. We'll give it to them.
And that is also not that much,
not
because
that much.
A lot of people are sort of, you know, he still is this guy that everyone thinks could potentially be the guy.
And let's recall that Bernie Sanders made $3.2 million in the 3 days following the Democratic debate.
That was seen as a bad number.
Yes.
Because it is.
Exactly.
Carry on.
So then on Thursday, Bush's camp announces that it's raised $13.4 million. Slightly more respectable, not super not wonderful great. I remember when the Democrats were making in the 40s and 50s.
He probably made $100 trillion in his super
PAC.
Well,
super PAC has more money than God.
Yeah.
But as we will talk about actually in a little bit, your super PAC can't buy certain things for your campaign. The operating costs have to come out of your campaign budget. Right. So you do need to raise campaign funds.
Well, and that's why Scott Walker had to get out too.
Exactly.
Because, you know,
he had all the super PAC money in the world, but
he didn't have any campaign money because nobody was giving him any money.
Right.
So he
just had the
Koch
brothers. There were two people that were paying for that campaign.
So you still do have to fundraise into your campaign.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Bush's campaign is saying that it raised $13.4 million in the last period, which is more than two times as much as Rubio, and that it held about $10 million in cash on hand.
Yeah.
So they were sort of being like, see, look at us. We even have $10 million to spare. So then, minutes later, the Rubio campaign comes out with new numbers, a new statement stressing that they have $11 million on hand. Mm. Just $1 million
more.
Just because they haven't spent as much. And that, you know, they're basically trying to imply that they are more sort of like frugal, that Bush's campaign is spending wildly and that they're sitting around being responsible spenders. So Bush, his campaign is pissed because obviously the statement is intentionally trying to make it sound like he's irresponsible and that Rubio has more cash on hand. Then, however, we find out that there was a slight exaggeration because $1.2 million of Rubio's total was in general election funds, which they're not allowed to touch unless he wins the primary. So really, he had less than Bush at $9.7 million. Just less. Because the Bush campaign's $10 million did not include general election
which
funds.
Which they told everyone,
again, after finding out that his did. So
This is not so much
petty,
a war.
By the way.
I was going to say, it's not so much a war as just like, you know, back and forth clarifications. Really,
it's like angry clarification. So then Bush's communications director tweets, "Lying about budgets. Guess Marco picked up something in the Senate."
Oh,
ooh,
I
shots
see
fired.
What he did there.
Because
Jeb's an outsider.
Exactly.
You know?
So in any case, they have now descended into a very petty war over $300,000 in discrepancies about who has more funds sitting in their coffers right now. Basically, Bush needs to win this because he's trying to counteract the narrative that he's losing donors and support.
Right.
And Rubio is finally on the upswing, so he needs to win this confrontation, if you will, so that it looks like he's...
Clarification
war. So that it looks like he's the guy on top in Florida.
Yeah.
Because Florida's primary is potentially going to decide a sort of significant GOP pool.
Yeah, it's a winner-take-all.
It's a winner-take-all primary.
Like
one of them can win, and it seems like if one of them wins, it's going to be whoever is doing well early in the primary process, because their primary is on March 15th, so it's an earlier primary, but it's like late enough that there will be some momentum behind somebody at that time. So they're just trying to sort of like hang in there until they can, you know, win Florida,
win all the
I guess.
Florida
but
votes.
Through dumb clarification wars about, like, it's too much.
Yeah.
Guys, but they were supposed to be such close friends too. I feel bad that this is coming between
them.
Each
other down.
I don't feel that bad either. Also, can you imagine, like, if you were at a dinner party?
Oh God.
With the Republican field.
Yeah.
The table with Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio would be the most boring table at that dinner party.
Yeah.
Like Ted Cruz's table would be more interesting, and he's an actual loon nut.
Yeah.
But like, at least he would be interesting. You know, he'd be saying nonsense. You'd be like, "You're evil. I can see it in your eyes," and you'd move on from there.
Right. But you're
Mike Huckabee's
to me
table.
Right now.
He'd probably be chuckling good naturedly about how stupid gays are, or something like that. It would be interesting for its own reasons. Like their table would be nothing but awkward silence.
Yeah.
It would be so boring.
So boring.
And like bewildered expressions.
Yeah.
It's too much.
Yeah.
Also, there are, and we've been referencing this repeatedly in the last few stories, because I'm excited about this story as well, there are about six candidates who are having sort of troubling burn rates.
Yeah.
On their campaigns. The burn rate is how much you spend versus how much you take in.
Right.
You don't want your burn rate to be more than 100% because then you're spending more money than you have. That's how economics works.
Yep.
And so basically, because these campaigns, you know, can't cover, because these super PACs can't cover certain costs, some of these are people that have super PACs behind them that are quite powerful, but their own campaigns don't have any people behind them. So there are six candidates with underwater burn rates. The most dramatic is Pataki, whose burn rate is 226%.
Right, because he probably doesn't have a damn dime.
No, he doesn't have a dime to his name. His campaign only has like $13,000, if you... We'll get down to the story in a second.
Yeah.
But he's spending more than twice what he's taking in. Lindsey Graham, at almost 188%, getting
almost
close to that.
Almost twice as much.
Rand Paul, 181%.
Yeah.
Apparently those Paul people aren't donating the money. They might get excited about marijuana, but they...
A lot of people are thinking that he is going to be the next one to go because of... A, this number, and then B, there are a lot of people who are sort of like establishment Republicans who are really wanting him to make sure that he retains his Senate seat.
Yes,
because Kentucky, you know, I mean, it's mostly Republican, but they have a Democratic governor, and the Mitch McConnell, Alison Lundgren Grimes thing sort of turned into a little bit of a situation, and people don't want that as a loser. And so, you know, he's got to really... decide whether this is actually going to happen.
Worth his time. Right. Yeah. Also, it's not going to happen.
Not.
So we have an answer for him already.
Yeah.
Bobby Jindal, 144%. Mm-hmm. Shocker. Mike Huckabee at 110%. Rick Santorum at 101%. Just a little more than he... Also, poor Rick Santorum.
I know.
That guy.
Yeah.
But I also want to point out that collectively, in the last quarter, these six raised $6 million, which is as much as Rubio himself raised and half as much as Bush, the idiot person that nobody cares about.
And a quarter of what Sanders raised.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Also, and collectively, they spent $9.5 million during that same period.
Yeah,
so collectively, they're underwater by $3.5 million. They're all trailing really badly in the polls, obviously. Rand Paul and Lindsey Graham have the most money in the bank.
Yeah.
Rand Paul has $2.1 million. Lindsey Graham has $1.7 million. First of all, why does Lindsey Graham have a bank? What is he spending the money on? I haven't heard a peep from him since he declared.
I know.
And what is he not spending money on? Where's the money coming from that he's not spending? It's like, it's so curious.
Yeah.
Pataki had less than $14,000 in the bank as of September 30th. That's less than Donald Trump spent on yard signs in the last quarter.
Sure.
And then, you know, there's by comparison, the number of donors that they have. So Ben Carson had nearly 2,200 donors.
22,000.
I mean, 22,000 donors. Bush had 7,300 donors. Pataki had 80. Jindal, 300. Graham, 650, curiously. Santorum, less than 300. Huckabee, just over 800. And Rand Paul had the most with 3,500. But obviously, his supporters aren't as rich as everyone else's. So they probably aren't giving as much money.
Yeah.
With that said, though, we're still very early in the process, and as we learned from the last round, when you have a field this large, everyone gets a shining moment at some point.
Well, that's
so many of these people just haven't had their moment yet.
Well, that's the thing,
so
and some of
like
them
weighing...
are starting to get it. I mean, the most recent polls coming out of Iowa have Bobby Jindal doing fairly well. I mean, he's not winning, but I mean, he's in the sort of like 6 or 7% in a lot of
so
recent
curious.
Iowa polls. Well, I mean, he's the sort of crazy that they like.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I mean, I'm sure he probably, at least in his own mind, is thinking, well, if I can just, like you said, you know, hang around until I get a moment and then maybe get some people to give me some money, then maybe I can hang around here for a little bit longer. But I mean, like, it can't go on forever like this.
No, but I mean, we recall that Rick Santorum was a nobody until the exact right moment in the last round.
And the reason that we recall that is because he likes to tell everyone at every turn. That's the reason that he still is giving to people as to why he's in the race, polling at 2%.
The reason we recall that is because it's the only thing we can currently recall about Rick Santorum.
Yeah.
That's all there is. Pink sweater vests and this.
Yeah.
So this is, I mean, this is sort of like, even with six of them sort of potentially leaving, we still have 10 of them in the race.
I know.
So that's, I guess 9 of them at that point in the race. That's still a zillion more people than they need. So the whole thing is a little bit curious anyway. I don't know what happens
if
some
all
of
six
people
of them get out, then there's going to be no more kitty debates.
I know. Well, also, though, I feel like they must not be the only people that can see that the front runners are not legitimate people.
Well, true.
Like that, if you are sitting in the back of the pack,
right,
and you are Rick Santorum, and you are at least someone who's legitimately run before,
right,
you cannot be looking at Ben Carson. You won a primary. You cannot be looking at Ben Carson and thinking this will stick.
Yeah.
Like, that just, I mean, it's the same way that I think the Democrats are having a hard time thinking that this Bernie Sanders thing is a long-term thing and not just, like, an accidental blip. Like,
right.
When you see someone that is totally out of left field leading the pack, you've got to think to yourself, like, this can't stay this way.
Yeah.
So they probably are all just holding on, hoping that things go back to normal at some point.
Probably.
Who knows if they ever will.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, moving on from election news,
yes.
We have some exciting news about how Fox News is nonsense.
Right. As if you needed it.
Shock of all shocks.
Just further proof.
A Fox News commentator has recently come under fire because he's a fraud.
Right. And by under fire, we mean
is under investigation.
Being investigated, investigation by the feds.
Right.
Because
Wayne Simmons, he's been appearing on Fox News he's appeared repeatedly as a commenter on national security topics and terrorism, things like that. He apparently, you know, he's credited as an expert because he claims to have been in the CIA.
Yeah. He has a very storied career in the CIA. And by storied, we mean
it's a story that he made. It's a story that he made.
Actually, because that didn't happen.
Yeah.
At all.
Also, though, he, based on this false resume, has been deployed overseas as a military intelligence advisor to our military. Which makes me wonder if our vetting process is as terrible as Fox News.
Right? Like, I mean, if Fox News doesn't know, then that's one thing. But, like, shouldn't our own government know whether a person was a CIA agent?
First of all, that's knowing whether or not you employed somebody yourself.
Exactly.
Second of all, we are the people that give identities.
Yes.
People's identities are granted by the U.S. government. So his identity, like, as much as he could fool Fox News with a fake story about his identity, the U.S. government is the only entity that has definitive proof of his identity because they gave it to him. His Social Security number is one that they made up and handed to him.
Yep.
His driver's license and passport were granted by the U.S. government.
And his CIA badge
something
that would have been granted
Would have been granted by the U.S. government had he been part of the CIA.
Had it been granted ever.
And had he had a high-level security clearance, as he claimed to, they would be the only people in a position to know if that was true.
Yeah.
And yet, here we are.
Yep.
Anyway, he was arrested, charged with committing wire fraud and making false statements to the government. He could be in prison for a long time if he is convicted. But also, the indictment also alleges that he defrauded someone of $125,000 in a bogus real estate investment, which is a hilarious random crime to commit in addition to all of this.
Yeah.
He was, as you might imagine, not a fan of the Democrats. He said a lot of crazy things about the Democrats in his tenure. In 2005, on O'Reilly, he warned that if the Democrats come into power in the United States and re-employ their vision of defense for this country, we will have 9/11s unabated. I would love to know, by the way, what he thinks, you know, as a security expert, what he thinks that their vision of defense for the country was and what he thinks the correct vision of defense is.
Yeah.
Because he is not someone who would have ever been in a position to have an opinion on that.
Correct.
Or no.
Yeah.
He's called Obama a boy king. He's called Nancy Pelosi a pathological liar.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, not a fan of Obama. He said, told Brian Kilmeade that the Obama administration would be viewed as the worst administration this country will ever have known, or that he predicts that that's what will happen. Also, though, he's got a book deal.
Oh, sure.
Writing fiction in a classic O'Reilly
book. Well, he should be good at that.
Exactly. Yeah, he might be one of the great American fiction writers, as he wrote a fictional account of his own life and sold it to the American public.
Yeah.
So him and what's his face?
Brian Williams.
Brian.
He and Brian Williams should get together.
And him and Loonbag, you know, the guy who writes the Christmas sweater and he also writes spy novels. You know, Bill O'Reilly writes spy novels.
Yeah.
And then there's also the former Fox News host, Mormon.
What's his face?
Why can't I never remember his name
anymore?
Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
Him and Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly could be very happy together writing spy novels that they've ghostwritten poorly by other people. In any case, there's also a fun scandal brewing in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Because Louisiana, as you may not know, because why would you know this, is having a gubernatorial election this year. Oddly, on like October 24th.
That's odd.
Like, don't have your election not be on election day ever, P.S.
Yeah.
But if you're going to have an election on October 24th, don't have it be in an odd year.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
I know, right?
Like, it's like, obviously they're going to elect a crackpot because nobody's going to vote.
Yeah.
Who even knows this is happening? People in Louisiana probably don't even know.
They probably don't.
They might know now because David Vitter
Who's the senator?
Who's the
from
senator
Louisiana.
From Louisiana he's and running. Is running in this race? Bobby Jindal, by the way, is term limited, so he is finally leaving.
Yeah.
But David Vitter has run into a little bit of hot water. David Vitter, you might remember as a family values, you know...
Yeah, he's a nutbag.
Nutbag Republican in the Senate. Just had a sex worker named Wendy Ellis come out and claim that they had a longstanding relationship and that he impregnated her and then asked her to abort the baby.
Right. Supposedly, she claims that they were together for 3 years after meeting him in the 90s when he was a state representative at the time. And,
did not abort the baby, by the way. She gave the baby up for adoption. Right. And she said they stopped seeing each other when she was 6 months pregnant. And she knows that he was the father because she wasn't sleeping with anyone else at the time, apparently.
Right.
But also wants to set the record straight because she's dying of lupus. What?
Yeah.
What a tragic spin on that story.
Right?
So she just finally, in the worst possible moment for him.
Right, exactly.
A week before the election, decided to tell everyone that since she's dying of lupus, she's going to blow his
campaign. I mean, this wouldn't be the first time that we found out that a Republican was having an affair and then either forced or tried to force
an abortion.
Them to get an abortion. Didn't we just have this scandal with someone recently? I can't remember who it was.
Yeah, well, we have one once a year, I feel like, too. I mean, this is a classic Republican man move.
Yeah, it is. They hate abortion.
They hate abortion unless their mistress needs to have one.
Yeah, exactly.
And what they know as politicians is that even if they restrict abortion to all other people, they will always be able to access them because they don't care about the safety of these abortions because they're mistresses, not wives. And they also are rich, so they don't care.
What I feel like is maybe an important question.
Yes.
Did she say that she was not sleeping with anyone else at the time, and is she a sex worker?
Is she a sex worker? Was she actually effectively working as a sex worker? Was she just a bad sex worker? I'll just let this one guy pay me for sex.
Was she an unemployed sex worker?
She's an unemployed sex worker.
Yeah.
Well, she had one client that was paying all of her bills. And as you do when you're a freelancer, you sometimes just focus on that one client because they pay you more. It's not worth the time of finding new work when you have one client that pays well.
Yeah, that's right.
Meanwhile, speaking of abortions.
Yes.
The Missouri GOP has some interesting plans.
Right, I think this is actually just one specific person, I think, isn't it? Or is it the party? It's two people.
They were having a discussion in the state legislature about what to do about this scourge.
About Planned Parenthood.
Yeah. The scourge of Planned Parenthood. And, you know, these are the same. They love small government until it involves a uterus. And then they only want to know. That was one of her finer moments. So, you know, in Missouri, they have tried to or have passed most of the usual suspects of, you know, with laws, hospital admission laws and, you know, 20-week bans and things like that.
To shut down abortion clinics.
To shut down abortion clinics. Now, someone has, in their discussion in the state legislature, recommended that they build a public memorial wall listing all the abortions performed in the state as a reminder to residents of Missouri.
Yes, and force Planned Parenthood to pay for it.
Yeah.
They think it will be like a Vietnam wall type.
Yes.
Is what they said, specifically.
Yes. Let's not worry about violating any sort of patient-doctor confidentiality. But he said, I know this sounds crazy. Well, it does, so he's right.
That's right.
But by state law, they're given human status, so should there be a human memorial? This is, by the way, when you've legislated yourself into a comedic corner. When you start declaring that rice-sized fetuses are humans, then do you have to start building memorials to those human lives?
Then it does make sense to build a memorial.
Exactly.
But only because you made the stupid decision to begin with.
Yes. So it's curious to see where you, like, I know that they won't make the right decision from here, but I feel like this should have been the moment that they were like, okay, wait a minute. Let's talk about whether it's right to even have this policy in the first place. Does this make sense for us right now?
Yeah.
Do we want to be in a position where we have to build a memorial wall?
Yeah.
Couldn't we just decide that this is not worthy of a memorial?
Nope, they couldn't.
They couldn't.
Yeah.
And in final news.
Going back to some presidential politics to finish us up here. And one of those six candidates who may be on their way out, the one that we mentioned most prevalently in that
last-ditch effort to be interesting.
Yes.
Rand Paul's campaign apparently is having some social media fun that he is not necessarily on board with.
Right. They did an entire live stream where they just live streamed with him all day. It was like a day in the life on the campaign trail with Rand Paul.
It was boring.
It was boring and sad.
Yes.
Because nothing really happened.
At one point, he's reading aloud comments about the campaign
online. He did kind of like a thing that I think they were... Well, it was actually like, I think they thought it was going to kind of be funny because I think they treated it almost kind of like mean tweets. Because all the questions were sort of jabby, kind of, you know?
Yeah.
And so But he kind of wasn't really that into it while he was doing it.
One of the questions was, is Rand Paul still running for president? And he said, I don't know, I wouldn't be doing this dumbass live streaming if I weren't. So yes, I'm still running for president. Get over it.
Get over it. I know. And it was like in a sad parking lot somewhere. Like, I don't know if you saw any of the footage. The whole thing just like, it wasn't even desperation. It was just
like unknowing sadness.
It was sadness.
Apparently another question was, where is Rand Paul in the polls? And he said, this isn't live, right? We can edit this.
That is, I know.
Nope. Not
no, you can't.
It's live stream.
That's why it's a live stream.
It's called live stream. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so, and then a campaign reporter also asked him why he decided to do this. And he was like, I wish I knew. I've been saying, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Now we're doing this. And then they started selling, on Wednesday, they started selling t-shirts that said, I watched Rand Paul's live stream and all I got was this dumbass t-shirt.
Right. I think he only ended up with like 100 and something followers on the live stream, too. I mean,
who cares?
I know.
Why would you think anyone would care?
No.
A lot of people are live streaming cockamamie things that nobody cares about.
Yeah.
That are not the purpose of live streaming.
Well, right.
Like...
But this is not the way to bail
National
out your
Ballet Day got more votes, more live stream viewers than
this. Oh, I'm sure.
And that was just people rehearsing ballets that weren't done yet. Like, this, why do I need to see Rand Paul on the campaign trail at all?
Being
why
sad.
Is he even on the campaign trail?
I know.
And why couldn't he be part of the fun if he was going to have to do this?
I know.
This is what I think worries me about a lot of these Republican candidates is... So many of them are not even a little personable.
I know.
Like,
and Rand Paul's one of the more personable ones.
Exactly. Like, when you think about, like, what it will be to have Marco Rubio as the front runner, what you will have is a guy with no sense of humor, like, having a boring exchange with the American people, during which, like, no one... And, like, him and Hillary, it's like, what if that happens? That's too much. I can't have that.
We might not be able to take it.
Bernie Sanders has a sort of wry sense of humor, but at least he has one. You get the feeling the guy can take a joke, like understands a joke.
Yeah.
Like understand a punchline when it's said to him and then also maybe have a punchline once in a while that he thought of organically. But like, it's like everyone else is so dull.
Yeah. I agree.
There's no one you'd want to have a beer with. Yeah. Actually, Hillary Clinton would be lovely to have a beer
with.
Oh,
I think so too.
It's just that you would never get that impression from seeing her.
Correct.
Because I have met her, as we know, on this podcast in the past, or as I've mentioned on the podcast in the past, she's lovely in person and very personable. The Clintons are very personable.
Oh, I'm sure.
That's how they get away with being themselves. But I don't get that feeling about a lot of these Republican candidates.
I don't
know. I bet Trump would be fun to have a beer with.
Obviously.
Be a lunatic. I mean, it'd be like having a beer with a delusional person, but like in a kind of fun way.
Yeah.
I don't think Ben Carson would be fun to have a beer with.
No,
at all.
I don't know. Probably doesn't even drink.
No, I probably doesn't do anything fun.
Yeah.
He probably... Can't also like is not a great conversationalist because
he talks too slow.
You can't keep up.
Yeah.
You need someone who can keep up. Mm-hmm. In any case, that's our podcast.
That's it. Keep checking the blog, by the way.
Keep checking the blog. We're going to be posting again this week.
Mm-hmm.
If you have not yet read our Jeb Bush Meet the Candidates post.
Yeah, it's good. Those are going
to
be
feel free to. Those are going to be good. Those are going to be rolling out over the next few weeks.
There's going
to
be some fun new pictures that we just took up.
Yes,
soon.
Exactly. So lots of excitement rolling out on all media
everywhere.
Platforms.
That's right.
And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.